Do you want to make a difference in the world?
And see the lives of the people of India and all internationals transformed with the gospel?
As India goes, all Asia will go with.
Living the Dream podcast provides tools for you to pray, give, and go
as you become an active participant in the Great Commission.
And help your church's demographic represent the demographic of your community.
Get ready to find your strategy for reaching your community and changing the world here at Living the Dream podcast with your host, Pastor Kevin.
Before we welcome today's special guest, Steve Rao, let me share some additional context why I was incredibly honored when Steve agreed to be on the show. In fact, it made my day when I heard Steve was scheduled. So let me tell you why. Steve is the son of immigrant parents from India. Now, he's a native of Charleston, West Virginia. He is currently serving in his third term on the town council in Mooresville, North Carolina, here in Wake County. And before this current term, he served as mayor pro tem. Steve is a senior business development executive at Alpha Numeric Systems, a global tech company headquartered in Raleigh, North Carolina. He was the first Asian American elected official in all of North Carolina. Steve's great-grandfather, U. Rama Rao, served as the Speaker of the House in the state of Tamil Nadu back in the 1930s. This was when India was still under British rule. And he left the parliament, his great-grandfather left the parliament to join Gandhi's civil disobedient movement. So Steve comes from a lineage of change agents. Steve is a political commentator and radio host. During his past 8 years in office, he has led efforts to start a growing entrepreneurship program in Mooresville, North Carolina. He has started an English as a second language classes and worked aggressively with the North Carolina Department of Transportation. Steve received a BA from Emory University in political science, where he played collegiate tennis, but then he went on to receive a Juris Doctorate in law from West Virginia University College of Law. And he now resides in Mooresville, North Carolina with his wife. This is going to be a conversation that's going to foster your comfortability with the international community. Steve, welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's a pleasure to be here. So my name is Steve Rao, and I'm a council member at large for the town of Mooresville. Former mayor pro tem, served in that role for 2 years, and back on my third term, on the council representing 30,000 people in Mooresville, but I also do a lot of stuff around the region. And I am actually originally from West Virginia and grew up there for about 31 years. My family was there, and I've been in North Carolina since 2001. I'm also a business development executive at Alpha Numeric Systems, a global technology company headquartered in Raleigh with offices in France, Portugal, Lisbon, United Kingdom, and growing our presence around the world.
What's your relationship with Alpha Numeric?
I run business development for us across all sectors. We're a global technology services firm with a lot of focus today on pharmaceutical and healthcare. It's a great North Carolina story, though. Alpha Numeric was founded by Darlene Johns in the 1970s, a first female technology entrepreneur. Her husband was one of the first CIOs of the state. And then about 10 years ago, it was bought by the Braswell family, Harvey and Karen Braswell. Harvey passed away a few years ago, but Karen Braswell still owns the company. And we have a new CEO. Well, he's been there about a year and a half, Randy Trice, and a growing sales team. It's quite fascinating. So it's a completely rebranded company. Was 80% government. Now it's 10% government. Mm. It was 90% hardware. Now it's 85% services. And it's a great economic development story because it's a company that withstood a lot of tough economic times, and it's still there.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how the company has retransitioned with all of the innovation. And now we're bringing in AI, machine learning into a lot of our product lines. So literally in my day job, it's like I'm living in a, you know, the funny thing is I was watching a Looney Tunes one day, and I saw like Tom and Jerry where drones were bringing in food, and you know, and then after that, there was a Star Trek with the, you know, Beam Me Up, Scotty, and all this stuff. And you look at all of these technologies are existing today.
Right.
So I'm in an industry where I see this kind of innovation, you know, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So you say you came to North Carolina in 2001. Did you go to Mooresville, North Carolina immediately?
Yeah, I was I was transferred. I'm a lawyer. I have a law background, but I've been really in high tech sales roles. And so I was with the company that was founded here, Empower Corporation. Founders were both NC State grads. Eventually got venture funding and became the company Mindlever, and was eventually sold to Central Software. So I was moved from, I was working for them out of Charleston, West Virginia. And then after we got venture funding, I transferred to Raleigh to work in the corporate headquarters. Mm-hmm.
So is your family all American, or is it a mix of Americans and Indians, born in India?
Well, yeah. So my parents were born in India. My dad grew up in Chennai. My mom grew up in Delhi. They were married in 1968. In 1969, they came to the United States for my dad to pursue a career in surgery. He went to Connecticut General Hospital, and then he ended up in West Virginia. One of his best friends, one of my uncles, still lives in Charleston, and he was there. And they ended up going to Charleston because Charleston needed some surgeons. So it was a bit of a change. But they grew up in the mountains of West Virginia. And then dad was there for 31 years, retired in 2001, and was a general surgeon.
Mm-hmm. So, and your wife? There.
My wife, I met my wife at Emory, my best friend in college. I was a college tennis player there for a while. And she is a pediatrician. Her parents are from Gujarat, India. They quite inspiring story. They came into the United States in 1972 with my wife. She was 2 years old. In 1977, they finished their residency, my mother-in-law in pathology, my father-in-law in general surgery, and they went on to serve in the United States Air Force.
Wow.
So they retired as colonels. My father-in-law passed away last May. My mother-in-law is still alive and lives in Mooresville. And but I got married on an Air Force base. So quite amazing, actually, to see. At that time, it was very uncommon to see immigrants from India serve in our armed forces. But I could see firsthand just their love of this country. And, they did one international tour in Japan and then retired in San Antonio. And then after we had our firstborn, who's now at UNC Chapel Hill, they retired here. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
So 2001, we're talking 18 years later. What has changed in Mooresville related to the Indian population?
Well, gosh, I mean, I think it just in Mooresville pretty much in Wake County, just a tremendous increase. Today in the town of Mooresville, first of all, Mooresville in 2001 was 3,000 to 4,000 people, maybe less than that. Today it's 30,000. It was mostly woods. So when you're driving through Mooresville today, you see very new looking, a lot of new development, mm-hmm. a new nice development. More greenways. We've got some exciting road projects coming. It's just looking more like a city now, right? But today, 30% of our population is Asian Indian. And not all of those are voting citizens. Many of them are still on the H-1B or immigration, waiting for their green card, waiting for their citizenship. But in Cary, which is 169,000, you probably have about 15%. Which is, you know, a smaller percentage, but a higher number because mm-hmm. it's a larger town, sixth largest town in the state. And then in Wake County, you probably have around, I would say about 55,000 to 60,000 of the 100,000 Asian Americans, 60,000 based on the numbers that I have seen, and we're doing a new census this year, are from India. So mm-hmm. it's a pretty massive, one of the most populated areas for Indian Americans.
Mm-hmm. So Indian, and obviously a big population. What other nationalities are living in Wake County?
Well, you have the Chinese American community, mm-hmm. Vietnamese, Korean.
Yeah.
There's also a large Nepalese community from Nepal. I have a very close working relationship with them. I knew the former ambassador, worked with Nepal, a lot of our leaders on the earthquakes, you know, helping them. But you have a few thousand Nepalese. And then we have actually Bulgarian community mm-hmm. in Mooresville, all kinds of Greek, Irish, I mean, just all over, really international. I heard Don Franz from Cary one day say that there's almost 70 nationalities represented in the town of Cary.
Wow.
And I'm sure that that's true mm-hmm. in Wake County, right?
Yeah.
A lot of nationalities represented.
Yeah. Our research has shown that there's been a big spike in the number of international populations in the U.S. since 1980, and that it's projected to double again before 2065. What's your projection in Mooresville? What's it going to look like 20 years from now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to continue to grow. I mean, I think that in Morsel and around Wake County, I mean, I think people, you know, we're living in a global economy, and I think that people want to come to places where they have a great opportunity to bring their best ideas. And so the Triangle area, Morrisville, Cary, is a great place because of our strong universities, because of the strong talent pool, the amount of innovation and research that's going on. So many of these individuals coming are PhDs. Mm-hmm. 32% of all of our STEM graduates in this region are foreign-born. 60% of PhDs that are teaching in our universities are foreign-born. Many of them are from Asia. Yeah. 30,000 software programmers in North Carolina are Asian or are foreign born. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of this because I do a lot of stuff in immigration. So I think you're going to see more and more wanting to come to this area because of just the opportunity. And mm-hmm. then the other component of that is the new jobs being created in the new economy. And this is happening anywhere in the world. Areas like, as we automate, many jobs are going to be displacing people, displacing our citizens. But there's going to be a lot of new jobs in AI, robotics, robotic process automation, cybersecurity. And so people are going to want to come to those areas of the world where those new jobs exist.
Yeah.
Because we have such a good community college, our community college system is really training people for these new jobs. So mm-hmm. Infosys, for example, thousands of open jobs in AI mm-hmm. in different jobs that don't even exist today.
Yeah.
But now people could come to Raleigh to get this job, right?
Yeah.
Quite fascinating.
Well, everybody that knows me knows that I love calling North Carolina home, but actually North Carolina is not even in the highest of the five top areas for Indian and foreign-born internationals. What do you know about the USA and just other pockets?
Well, one area
throughout the US?
One area we hear a lot about is Edison, New Jersey, which is very similar to Morrisville. You have a lot of Indian American there. You have a lot of diversity in Silicon Valley, California. You know, just the Bay Area, right? Yeah. I mean, just tremendous diversity. New York City, Atlanta, tremendous. I mean, any urban area, yeah. Chicago, I'm sure. Silicon Valley, tremendous amount, mm-hmm. right? The North, New Jersey, New York City, very, very high concentrations. A lot of them are coming here because of the universities, and the cost of living is less than living in New York or California or even Boston, mm-hmm. right? So they're coming here.
Yeah. One of the points we're trying to get across on this episode is that historically, the stereotype of diversity has been New York City, LA, and San Francisco and that. But it is happening right here, as you're saying, in the forest of Mooresville, North Carolina. And that's true around the USA. There are international communities that are on the increase everywhere you go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we're living in a global economy. So I think it's very important to understand that the fight for competitiveness is going to be the places in the world that have recruit the best and brightest talent to come here. And I think oftentimes with everything going on today in America, it's very polarizing time, mm-hmm. social media, Twitter, regardless of what political party you're a member of, right? But we often forget that 44% of the Fortune 500 were founded by immigrants. Estee Lauder, Best Buy, Google, Yahoo, Nordstrom's, I could go on and on. And I mean, it's quite amazing that people came here from another country with their ideas, right? Mm-hmm. So the areas of economic growth in the future are going to be those places in the world that want to lure the best and brightest talent in. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the challenge we face in America is both, you know, from a legal immigration, illegal immigration, but how do we have a system that's encouraging the best and brightest to come? Now, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, these are countries that, make no mistake, are competing for that talent.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So, this is not really a political show, and we're not really trying to dive into the building of the wall issues and things like yeah. that. But culturally, just to be honest about it, culturally, the word immigrant is an unfavorable word in some of our conversations and in some of our media and the news and things like that, politically and things. We really want to use this episode and having Steve here in the studio with us to just look at the differences between these international communities and how we can really celebrate the differences that we have. So Steve, any funny stories? You've met a lot of people that have been born in India and other nations coming into Mooresville, North Carolina. Any funny culture shock stories?
Oh, I mean, there's so many. I mean, I think that, you know, I think that, you know, the funniest thing I can tell you is that I've seen, like, we have an East meets West first in Mooresville. And, you know, I saw a guy one day, he went to the stall and he bought a samosa. And then right next to the stall, there was barbecue, and he ended up buying barbecue. And he goes, how come I'm holding a samosa and barbecue in one hand? This shouldn't be happening. So that was sort of funny.
Yeah.
So then he said, I can't have this barbecue. He gave me the barbecue, and I ate the barbecue. That was like 2 years ago. But I could go on and on. I mean, we're playing cricket in Mooresville.
Yeah.
Not funny stories, but I think people are very excited about their new culture and living at the same time beside folks that grew up on, you know, watching Carolina football, Carolina basketball, NC State, you know, Wolfpack, having a barbecue, a sweet tea. Do I want Eastern-based North Carolina sauce or the Western-based North Carolina sauce? So getting involved in those kinds of local conversations can oftentimes be quite funny in a good way. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, let's just calm the dispute right now. It's got to be Western sauce. Who in the world wants mustard sauce on their barbecue?
Yeah, me too. I like Western sauce.
I heard the funniest story one time 20 years ago when an Indian family moved in and their coworkers took them to a pig picking. And they literally thought that they were going to go out and pick the pig that the family was going to raise. And then they go out there and there's this slaughtered pig that they are barbecuing and that everybody's coming together to devour. And it was so foreign to our friends from India, but they had the best laugh about it. And nobody got into a brawl. It wasn't an ugly thing. It was actually a celebration of just the differences around the pig picking. So what's your favorite American food? I mean, you're American, so this isn't necessarily the fairest question, but do you, in your diet find that you're, definitely eating more Indian, cuisine, or are you?
Well, my wife and I, we eat a little bit of everything. I grew up eating Indian food, mostly from the southern part of India, which is more vegetarian, but then eventually eating chicken and, you know, chicken curries and dosas and idlis, which are your, you know, classic, you know, Indian, southern Indian food. But today, I guess my favorite, you know, grew up, I'm eating healthier these days, but on special occasions, I love a good old American, you know, bacon cheeseburger with fries. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite American foods.
You're going to get a lot of cheers from that. Yeah. Maybe some booze, but that's great.
I'm healthier this year. So I've been, you know, eating hamburgers maybe on Memorial Day. I'll probably have one when I watch the U.S. Open with a cold beer at home, just pretending I'm at the U.S. Open, but not having to pay $60, you know. Yeah. Last year I was at the U.S. Open, I had to pay, you know, $20 for a hamburger, you know, $12 for a hamburger, $15 for a Heineken, and, you know, it's like $40 for just lunch, you know?
Yeah.
But, and then, maybe barbecue, mac and cheese, you know, your classic.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. So we've taken a lot of tourists over to India, and for the most part, people are loving the India cuisine, but there are a few dishes, especially like your breakfast dishes. Whenever we take the tourists down and there's a buffet of Southern cuisine there for breakfast, sometimes you'll just see the eyebrows raised. Are there any dishes like that in the U.S. that you still have not come to terms with? Why in the world are Americans eating this?
Like, chicken liver? Could never quite understand that.
There's a gas station that always has it on their gizzards.
In Mooresville. There's one of your stations that
I've
says
liver
and gizzards.
I've never had it, but I'm pretty sure I don't want it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just always wondered, why would you want to eat that? And cow tongue. I think my dad, when he first came to the U.S., someone offered him cow tongue, and he was so hungry, I think he ate it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It just.
Yeah. So you already are a brilliant man, and you have an incredible career. Why would you want to go into public office and join the Mooresville Town Council?
Well, yeah, you know, I've been involved with politics in that. When I lived in West Virginia, I was doing some lobbying work. I worked closely with State Senator Joe Manchin at that time, who went on to become West Virginia's Secretary of State, Governor, now United States Senator. I worked with other politicians, and John Amores, one of my old friends who was a legislator, first Filipino legislator in the United States, and that was a big influence on me because I grew up with him when I was a kid, and he's out of politics now, but I always had an inclination. And then what happened in 2010, Tom Murray won a seat in the legislature, the General Assembly, and he approached me and said, you know, why don't you run for the council seat? He was Republican. I was a Democrat, moderate Democrat. I'm very bipartisan. And I decided, why not? At first, I didn't want to because I'd run for county commissioner and lost, but I ended up running and winning. And I feel like it was a big step for the community, a small step up for me when I look back. But now we have other Indian Americans serving. Satish Garamella, my colleague, an immigrant from India who's serving now and is going to be serving in his second term. Dimple Ajmera, an immigrant from India who's a city council member at large for the city of Charlotte. Jay Choudhury, who's the first Asian American state senator. Now he's the minority whip. And I feel like I'm very excited because I can't take credit for those individuals running. But even Senator Choudhury sometimes makes me feel better that I was the first. And, you know, I think that just being able to win that first election showed others you could maybe do it, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is good. And now we've got others wanting to run. But I never thought I would get into politics. Mm-hmm. But I do like the fact, I like being in the city because I can, you know, I've been leading the efforts in smart cities. Technology is more of the salesman for our council with all my connections, working on building out Mooresville. And I enjoy that part of it because I can see my work progress through the work that I'm doing.
And now, a story from the mission field.
So we're up in Manipur, India, with a medical clinic team. And this is the first time in the history of GHI that we have medical professionals from the U.S. being teamed up with medical professionals in India. In this particular trip, we have the Indian medical professionals right there with us, and they go into action. We're in a very rural area, and there is no surgical operatory anywhere nearby, and there are seven patients with skin cancers and tumors and different things that can be treated if they could just have a sterile environment for the doctors to do some procedures. One morning, I remember going into the clinic and one of the Indian doctors was so excited to take me over to the operatory that they had set up. And he took me into the staff room of this school, and it has a dirt floor, and it has a door and it can be closed in, but in the U.S. perspective, this would be in a barn. And they had taken it and turned it into a sterile environment for operatory. One of the surgeons on the team that day performed seven different surgical procedures in that room and was able to remove skin cancer and growths and tumors and things that people have been living with for a long time. And I was so blessed to see the faith that God had given to the Indian medical professionals that have been on that team, and just his provision to take doctors from Bangalore and bring them all the way up to Northeast India to meet the needs of this village. It was truly a God moment that I'll never forget.
Want tools to help increase the effectiveness of your church's efforts to reach the internationals in your community? Global Hope India has 20 years experience and can empower you to live the dream like we see in Revelation chapter 7 of every nation, tribe, and tongue worshiping Christ. Check out our resources like this podcast and other resources at globalhopeindia.org. Reach out today.
Know your numbers. Maybe you've seen the show Shark Tank, and you've seen the business owners come in to pitch to the sharks and explain why they're the right person to execute the vision for their business. Well, we believe that you are the right person to execute the vision for your church, and you need to know your numbers.
Okay, so picture this. Planet Earth, inhabitants, 7 billion people. Of that 7 billion, we have 3 billion that are considered unreached by the gospel. 1 billion of those 3 consider home to be India. So when you think of the need to reach India with the gospel, you are identifying 1/7 of the world's population. Dr. Billy Graham said, as India goes, all of Asia will go with her. India is 1.3 billion. And Dr. Billy Graham is saying, if we can make Christ known among the 1.3 billion, they will help us to reach the 4.6 billion that are identified as Asian. So that's why we're so passionate about reaching Indians, because we do see that as strategic in making Christ known among all internationals. How are you seeing the international community actually become represented in Mooresville
Well, it's exciting. So you have Ya Liu now, a Chinese-American woman immigrant, is running for the Kerry Council. And so what happens is, and then you have others that are running. You've got others that may run. And I see a younger generation now that are going to college, that are graduating from college, that may now want to run for the General Assembly, other offices. So you are, I think, going to see more representation. I would like to see, I'm glad Ya Liu is running. I think it's good. I mean, even, you know, I think she's running against an incumbent, but I think you're going to see others from other nationalities run. So right now, the four that we have in North Carolina are Asian Indian, and the three in Wake County are men. Only one woman in Charlotte, Dimple Ajmera. So I do hope that we get more women to run of Asian persuasion, but I also hope that we have Vietnamese, Chinese, Korean, because the more you have representation in cities, in school boards, in the General Assembly, it does help bring representation and a voice. Also, from all political parties. So I want anyone listening to this podcast to know, if you're a Republican, or it doesn't matter, run on your ideas. And I tend to be more bipartisan than most Democrats, because I believe the greatness of America is listening to each other and getting out of the notion of campaigning and governing. And governing is oftentimes listening to different parties. So hopefully we'll get representation both from political parties, but also from other nationalities.
Well, as you know, one of our audiences is the church leader across the U.S. And one of the points in this podcast has on our show has been that our government is becoming more and more diverse. You can go to Costco and you see it filled with internationals. You can go to Walmart. You can see it filled with internationals. Our schools are very diverse. Our communities are diverse, but even in the U.S. churches, you still have predominantly white and predominantly black churches. You have a mix of white and black churches, but you really don't have the influx of internationals as you do in government and community and the marketplace. And if we could just talk about diversity and what your experience has been as you see the international community population growing here in the U.S.
Well, the good news for me is that I think that it's a good thing that we have a lot of the international community coming in. And I think it's not really a concern, but one of the things I think is very important is that we all try to learn from each other. I think as communities grow in numbers, you typically tend to see these communities only socializing with each other. So, for example, We're doing stuff in Mooresville with the East Meets West Festival, which is on September 14th at Park West Village, where you're going to have different cuisines, different cultures, different music, Western, Eastern, all coming together so we can learn from each other. These Indian festivals like Diwali and some of these different celebrations, I'm actually asking these communities to open up. So like, you know, a Hindu temple to invite the Christian community to come, or clergy to come in. I go to a lot of churches. I go to the Mormon church once a month to meet residents. I go to Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church. Dumar Harshaw from First Baptist is a good friend of mine. I serve on the MLK committee with him. He's the chair of the Triangle MLK committee. So I work with them. So I think learning from each other is very, very important. And it's easy to get in the comfort zone, typically for any minority community. But I think it's just also helpful that we have a dialogue, that we're learning from each other. And also for Hindus, or other religions, to go to a Christian church to listen to a sermon. I get a lot out of going to the church. I like going to the Church of Latter-day Saints. One of the reasons I love it is they have in the one in Mooresville, at the end of every sermon, they will have people come and talk about their experiences with Christianity. And it's fascinating because you hear these stories, you really learn about people, and I walk away learning something, right? So I hope that answers your question, but I think it's very important that we get, and this is how I was raised. I want to thank my mother who, you know, when I was growing up in West Virginia, there weren't that many Indian families. So my mother taught us how to assimilate, how to learn from each other. And it was wonderful. I mean, she started an international club. We would go across the street, learn about Jewish culture, Islamic culture, Indian culture. She would tell stories of her father, who was a World War II veteran, and then found out, hey, there's a lot we have in common, because my grandfather, who might have been a Christian or living in whatever, another country, was a World War II veteran, right? Mm-hmm. So trying to see where we have common ground rather than just looking different than someone or speaking a different dialect and saying, okay, you know how to be. And that's what makes America great, bringing all these great things and creating this, what I call mosaic of different cultures.
So I wanted to describe two cultures that I've been exposed to in my lifetime. One is here in the Deep South, well, in North Carolina, and just the racism in the USA, just the conflict among blacks and whites. And unfortunately, we have a horrible history of that. And there's been a lot of progress, but we still have a long way to go. But then in the last 20 years, the culture of being exposed in India and going to this country of 1.3 billion people and seeing the vast differences across the land of India, and yet you can experience, I sense, a unity there that we don't always get to experience here in the USA. And so part of my argument here on the Living the Dream podcast is that we need the international community in our US communities, because they don't have the fear and the tension among racial groups that we have historically had, and they're much more willing to celebrate diversity, to celebrate the differences. They're not on a campaign to make everybody the same in order for there to be unity.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, Kevin, because I because I do more commentating on the radio now. I must confess, I listen to Fareed Zakaria a lot. I would encourage anyone. He's a fascinating journalist. He's got this thing called GPS Fareed Zakaria, and he always does Fareed's take. But one of the things Fareed Zakaria, he's an Indian journalist born in India, one of the best journalists on TV, on CNN. He talked exactly about what the irony of India is, that it's the largest democracy, but one of the most diverse democracies. So if you look at Prime Minister Modi's coalition, every state has a different language, a different dialect. India is really a lot. I can speak more from India's perspective just because I follow it, but, and I just was there this year, but every state, every dialect is different. So you have so much diversity. So it's one of the most largest democracies, but Fareed was saying that it's also one of the most diverse democracies.
Yeah.
And that makes it so democratic. And so when you're in a country where you're living literally state to state, like in India, if you go to Gujarat, where the Prime Minister Modi is from, or you go to Andhra Pradesh, many Indians are from Andhra Pradesh or the state of Telangana or Maharashtra, where my colleague Kiman, Satish Garmela grew up in Mumbai. It's a different state. Mm-hmm. It's like going to a different country.
It is.
Literally in India. I was in West Bengal. It's like a totally different than the southern part of India. So how do you live in a democracy and where you have such diversity?
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's really where the advantages of getting used to living in diversity. Now, it's different in the U.S. with the civil rights struggles we've had, where it's the difference of racial skin color. Mm-hmm. So white and black, the racism, segregation, right?
Yeah.
You do have a lot of intense differences in India based on the states, you know, but it's interesting, very insightful that you brought that up for the podcast. Yeah.
I don't think most Americans can even comprehend what it would be like to drive from North Carolina into South Carolina and not speak the language any longer. And to drive to West Virginia and not speak the language any longer.
It's very different. And I think that's one thing people don't understand about, you know, India, is that India is a lot, in many ways, like what the former Soviet Union was. It's a compilation of very independent, autonomous states.
Yeah.
Yes, they have a prime minister, they have a national parliament, they have a high court, the Supreme Court, but a lot of the decisions are made based on that individual state, where, you know, they have over 19 dialects in India. Mm-hmm. And you see this in Morsel and Kerry. There are so many different organizations. There's the Telangana organization, Andhra Pradesh, which is Tata. You have different groups that represent every state of India. They have their own culture. They have their own food. They have their own dance. They have their own music. And you have literally thousands of these groups. So it's not like there's just one India and one country.
Yeah.
There's many, many different nation states within one large country, which makes it hard to govern. That's why India's had a lot of challenges, because it's hard, unlike a China, for example, to say, you know, they had more of a totalitarian system, but they could say, we're going to invest in infrastructure. We're going to invest in these things. Of course, it wasn't democracy, right? But India, you know, it's been harder. Mm-hmm. And Kevin, you and I have worked on Carry the Water. Mm-hmm. And we ask ourselves, how can a country that has so much skill and talent, still a lot of illiteracy, mm-hmm. potentially run out of water in 20 years?
Yeah.
Chennai, they're saying 10 years.
Yeah.
How could it be?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think part of the problem is when you have so much diversity, it's hard to mm-hmm. have a national strategy.
Yeah. But I'm so impressed. Every time I go over to India again, and I'm going a couple times a year, I can see the progress. There's been an incredible shift in development, even in the last 5 years. Everyone having mobile phones and the infrastructure, yes, the highway system.
Another very insightful point. I will say that I have seen a significant improvement in the infrastructure of India. I hadn't been in 9 years.
Yeah.
I went to West Bengal with Swadesh Chatterjee and Elaine Marshall, the Secretary of State. And it was amazing to see the infrastructure, the airports. Mm-hmm. They're as nice as U.S. airports now, probably nicer.
Yeah, nicer.
The roads better. Mm-hmm. Building roadways, building subways, still lots of challenges, lots of tremendous congestion and traffic, but a lot farther along, and also a younger country. We also what's amazing about India is that 65% of the country is under 35. Mm. So there's a lot of energy there, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of hope. The executives are younger. The leaders are younger. They're like, yes, we want the next startup to be here. I could feel it, the energy. And I think that's something that is exciting for them, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The new India.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we are an advocate here on Living the Dream podcast that our U.S. churches would really embrace the diversity that is happening all across the USA, and that we would welcome that into our communities fully.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, I think that's what we need in America, and we need to get a dialogue going where we can all work together, learn from each other.
Because it's been my experience in India, the culture is not as a rule, the people of India are not threatened by other skin tones and by the differences of other nationalities. They've already become so, it's been ingrained in them that this is acceptable, this is tolerable, you don't have to fear this. And it's not that Americans are running around in fear of different races and things like that, but there's just that air of suspicion and an unwillingness to walk across the road or across the cubicle and into the marketplace and become intentional about building friendships. And that's really one of our calls here is just that, to just become a friend with an international. Just begin to get to know an international by name and to visit in each other's homes and to celebrate the differences there.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I applaud what Town of Mooresville is doing to bring East and West together and those kind of efforts.
And the Town of Kerry. I want to give them a shout out with Kerry Diwali, which is going to be on October, I think, 12th at the Kokabooth Amphitheater. And I would encourage you all to come. This is Diwali is the Festival of Lights. Mm-hmm. That's why you see it's a celebration of light over darkness, good over evil. Mm-hmm. Every October, it's like India's national holiday where they shut down for about 3 or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. Kokabooth Amphitheater, huge Diwali festival. Over 30,000 people attend. Mm-hmm. You can learn about all the different states. See they have a nice dance performance, musical performance, and then fireworks at the end. Mm-hmm. But this is a great, in Kerry, they've really grown this. They sponsor it every year, and it's led by an organization called Hum Sub. And it's just fantastic. And then you've got the Dragon Boat Festival mm-hmm. in Kokabooth Amphitheater, the Chinese Lantern Festival. Yeah. So all these things are great opportunities for us for inviting mm-hmm. North Carolinians or people from around the country to learn about those different cultures.
Yeah. Our time's running out here. Is there anything you would want to add as far as just finding unity and diversity?
Well, you know,
we can come back. This is great, and I want to continue the conversation.
No, I'll be back. I'd love to be back. I can get you involved. I want to thank you all for doing this podcast. And I just love the name of the podcast. I'll just close out with this, Living the Dream. I think we're all living the dream. And I think that, you know, in America, is becoming a more diverse country and an older country. And I think we're aging, we're staying alive longer because of healthcare. But we have, like you said, Kevin, we're becoming more diverse. And so we can only coexist as a nation and be united and do great things as America if we just accept that and learn from each other. And I think that I appreciate the fact that you're bringing in these different perspectives. And I think it's a matter of the dream is something that we're going to be living every day, but we've got to live it with people that don't look like us, don't maybe believe in the same religions. It's all about creating this mosaic, which is America. And we're the only country that's been able to make it work. We're the world's oldest democracy. And we have to go back to history to understand that we are a republic. And it's a fascinating gift to pass on to our children, but also an inspiration to millions around the world. And, so I think it's so commendable for you guys to start this podcast. And I'm so honored to be here as a guest. And would encourage you all to visit Morrisville. I'm always, even when I go on WPTF, Rick and Donna always joke that I'm always selling Morrisville, but yeah. I'd be remiss if I didn't say, come to Morrisville, yeah. Check out our cricket, our great restaurants. And, we've got a great thing going on, but also Carrie's great.
Yeah. So let's end the podcast with one of your best Trump impressionations.
Oh God. Okay. I'll do it. I love India. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Okay. I just don't like curry. Curry's very hot.
That's great. Thank you so much, Steve Rao. Thank you for being here.
We want to hear from you. We've set up a dedicated phone line to record your 3-minute story at 817-66-DREAM. Have you experienced the power of the words "I've been there" as a result of going on an international missions trip? We want to know. Call 817-66-DREAM and leave your message. If we pick your message, we'll send you a free Living the Dream t-shirt. Check it out on our website, 817-66-DREAM. This episode is complete, so head over to globalhopeindia.org for show notes and more resources for your success. Continue to find your strategy for reaching your community and changing the world here at Living the Dream.